weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz and Emma for driving us into the weekend. It is Friday, January 31st. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. We have a packed hour of sport coming your way between now and 7pm here on 2FM. Alan Colley previews the weekend's Premier League action. In Gaelic games, Shane McGrath and Brendan Devenny set us up for round two of the Allianz Leagues. Jane Mangan tees up the Dublin Racing Festival. And we'll hear from Ireland captain Caelan Doris ahead of England's visit to Lansdowne Road tomorrow evening. As always, you can get in touch via text on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or join the conversation on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. Happy Bank Holiday Friday, listeners. Alan Colley, happy Bank Holiday Friday.
Big smiley face on you, Shane Dawson. I love it.
You bounced in. You always bounce in, Alan, yeah. But a bit more. Because
I do, yeah.
Looking forward to a Bank Holiday of sport. Full of sport.
Well, normally, to be fair, Shane, obviously, as sport lovers, we're very lucky because we're blessed with it every weekend and loads to talk about and discuss and a nation of sports fans, which is brilliant. But this weekend, even more so, I just don't know which way to turn, and their sport hit me in the face everywhere I look, Shane. Now, I'm not complaining by any means, but it is an extra special weekend, obviously, with the Dublin Racing Festival, Six Nations starting.
Home farm under-12s against Shells.
That's
as well.
The big one, Shane. I'm glad you mentioned it. Who needs the Dublin Racing Festival when you have home farm under-12s versus Shelburne under-12s tomorrow, Shane? It's all I'm thinking about. And what a group we have as well. Fantastic young men they are.
There's your shout. There's your plug, Alan Colley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, sticking with some football transfer news and a retirement to start off with, actually. Julianne Russell has announced her retirement from football following 66 appearances and 7 goals for the Ireland women's national team and an impressive club career, most recently with Galway United. Alan Colley, we talk about great servants to Irish football, but to do it all, take a bit of a break, come back then and just grab headlines, perform consistently, the longevity. Unbelievable from
Julianne
Russell.
Well, as the song goes, Shane, I did it my way, and that's absolutely what Julianne has done, because as you say, to have one stint and one go at it, then to go off and give birth to a beautiful little girl as well, and then come back, score the goal against France in the huge game there, and I think it was down in Thomond Park, wasn't it, back in the summer, and it kind of caught me a little bit by surprise.
Porky Queef.
Kind of caught me a little bit by surprise, Shane, because she's done so well since she's come back. And I thought, like, obviously a very fit girl as well. I remember Eileen speaking in the press conference prior to those games as well, and people were asking about the fact that the season had finished earlier here compared to the girls who were still playing in the WSL, and would it affect Julianne? And she spoke about that she's probably one of the fittest in the squad. So there was nothing in that regard kind of, you know, hampering her in terms of injuries or maybe getting too old or anything like that. So I'm sure it's something to do with maybe family commitments or whatever.
Yeah, because it's a retirement from football, not just international
exactly.
football.
Exactly. So in that regard, good luck to her. But in terms of doing it your own way and almost having that brilliant moment, as I say, to kind of, she'll remember that forever. And I think the little one was on in amongst the girls and all, and brilliant memories to have. So yeah, brilliant servant, and best luck to her in her future endeavours as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, a blow for Carla Ward with Niamh Fahey, Diane Caldwell, now Julianne Russell, all retiring from international football, and Julianne's case from football completely. Ireland international Festi Ebeseli has signed a 3.5-year contract with Turkish side Istanbul Başakşehir, who are currently 7th in the league table. Newcastle United women have completed the signing of Ireland international Emily Murphy, who last played for American side, I love this name, Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Now there's a football club for you, Alan. And finally, Danny Mandreou has agreed a new multi-year deal, the buzzword in the League of Ireland, multi-year deal with Shamrock Rovers to remain in Tallaght. Just briefly, we've a packed show, Alan, but good business from Shamrock Rovers there.
Great business, but I'm very envious. There wasn't many multi-year deals when I was doing my thing, Shane. But no, fair play to them. It's great to see the league in a position where it can offer lads long-term contracts as well. But in terms of business for Shamrock Rovers, brilliant addition, Mandrew.
Briefly on the golf as well. It's a pity, John, the two hole-in-ones yesterday, Alan. If it had been over the weekend, it would have been boxed off. Our weekend highlights for Monday already done, boxed off and completed. But Shane Lowry has birdied the opening hole of his second round to move within one of the lead at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am today. Roy McIlroy was due to tee off. He has just teed off. He is 6 under, 3 shots now off the lead. Lowry, through 3 holes, is now 2 shots off the lead, 1 under, 7 under overall.
I think Greg had a brilliant tweet up today, Greg Allen, obviously so hands-on with the golf, but he had a brilliant tweet up about Shane's collection of hole-in-ones.
Oh, really?
3 iconic holes. Like, you couldn't pick 3 better holes. I think the 16th at Augusta, that seventh hole last night in the Pro-Am. And the other one was, I think it was the 17th at the TPC in Sawgrass. Three unbelievable par threes, and to have hole-in-ones in the three of them. Check out his tweet, yeah, brilliant. So for Shane, and I suppose, look, in terms of everything that they achieve and the accolades and the honours, but those little hole-in-ones at those special holes, amazing.
Yeah, and to have two Irishmen to do it in the one day as well, as I scramble for Greg Allen's tweet there to see. I'll take your word for it.
I'm nearly sure I have those three holes correct, yeah.
We'll take your word for it. You're rarely wrong, Alan Colley. Right, we're turning our attention to rugby, because Six Nations begins tonight, actually, with France against Wales at 8:15. But earlier today, Michael Corcoran spoke to Ireland captain Ceilán Doris, who's excited about opening their Six Nations campaign against the old enemy, England.
Yeah, definitely. Come back into camp 10 days ago with this bring around the corner, it definitely sharpens the mind and gets everyone excited. We're very aware of the quality that they bring and the physicality and how many threats they have throughout their team. So, yeah, we're looking forward to tomorrow a lot and getting our stuff right and delivering a good first performance.
The only benchmark that we have, I guess, in terms of Ireland versus England would be last year in Twickenham. They out-muscled it, is probably fair to say, on the day and won the game. Are you expecting a similar physical approach from them tomorrow?
I think so. If you look at the pack, they've selected 8 physical players. They'll be going after set piece, breakdown, all very strong and capable ball carriers as well. So collision dominance from us is going to be hugely important, and the physicality around set piece and general play is going to be a big factor.
It appears as if you're going to be up against nearly 10 pairs of hands at that breakdown. I mean, that's going to be pretty ferocious, and it'll probably define this contest.
Definitely, yeah. It was an area that wasn't quite at our usual standard in November, so it's something that we'd spoken about anyway, but then when you see their team selection come out, it sharpens the mind even more. And yeah, like you say, it's going to be a very important battle that we need to get right.
Will discipline play a big part?
Yeah, that was another area in November. Our penalty count was definitely higher than usual. We talk about kind of being on the edge and wanting to create a bit of chaos around the breakdown and in our general defence as well. But yeah, we've got to be on the edge, but not over the edge.
Previous coaches have said you don't kind of retain a trophy. You've got to draw a line in the sand and move on and win it again.
Definitely, yeah. I think there's a lot of belief in this squad. There's a sort of awareness that there's plenty more growth in us. And if we play to our potential and continue to chase down that potential, good things will follow.
And just a final word about Sam Prendergast and him. He's wearing jersey 10. A lot of responsibility on young shoulders.
Yeah, definitely, but very capable. He's shown his quality now for a number of years, from 20s to URC to Europe and in international games as well through November. So there's a lot of belief from the squad in him. And yeah, he's loving it.
Ireland captain Ceilán Doris speaking to our own Michael Corcoran there. Don't forget you can listen to live commentary on RT Radio 1's Saturday Sport, an extended Saturday Sport for that match at the Aviva tomorrow, Ireland against England.
Game on. Racing.
Now, as Alan Colley alluded to at the start of the show, it's a big weekend of sport, and that includes the Dublin Racing Festival. Two of the biggest days in the Irish jump racing calendar ahead of us. Jane Mangan is on the line. Jane, what makes a DRF just so special?
Eight grade ones into two.
Do we have Jane? We may reconnect with Jane. Is Jane there? Alan Colley, just briefly as we get Jane back up there, you're a big racing fan. Are you looking forward to the Dublin Racing Festival?
Yeah, it's a brilliant addition onto the calendar, Shane. It really is. So elite level racing in Leopardstown over the weekend. Absolutely amazing. Sandwiched in between the Christmas Festival and obviously Cheltenham. So I think from speaking to Ruby and Jane, and she'll be able to tell herself, but I think it has been a brilliant addition onto the calendar.
She most certainly will be able to tell us herself. Jane is back with us. Apologies about that, Jane. We were just bigging up the Dublin Racing Festival. And you might be able to tell us very shortly just what makes it so special. We had Danny Mullins on Tuesday's show speaking to Ruby Walsh, and he was kind of outlining everything that I suppose attains to this special meet. Two big days in Irish jump racing calendar. Jane Mangan is finally with us. Jane, the excitement of the DRF was getting too much for me and Alan Colley that we broke the lines, I think, to you. So you're back with us there to outline just how special this event is.
Yeah, why is it the biggest weekend in the National Hunt calendar here in Ireland? It's probably because you fit 8 grade ones into 2 days. So you'd often have 8 grade ones at the Punchestown Festival spread over 5, but this is concentration of quality. And I think a lot of UK punters come across because they get really good value for money in comparison to Cheltenham. And then you add in the Six Nations factor, and the capital city in Ireland is the place to be in Europe this weekend. So hopefully we can, you know, make a few quid and enjoy the sport on and off the pitch.
You mentioned eight Grade 1 races, all very much a show of strength of Willie Mullen's firepower, it's fair to say.
That is true. He does field 33 runners out of 66 runners in the eight Grade 1s. So numerically, he's very strong. But in terms of quality and what he's running, he is too. He's got the top two in the betting for the champion hurdle, Lost Him Out versus Stateman. That looks like a match. He's got the main two in the Irish Gold Cup with Factifile and Gallop and Deschamps. That looks like the rematch.
Mm.
And then if you take in the Dublin Chase, which is, for me, basically the champion chase of the festival, that's Gaelic Warrior versus El Fabiolo to a certain degree. I think it's not a two-horse race by any means, but again, he fields the two of them. So it is a show of power from him, but he does use it often as a springboard, not only to win big prize money and big races at Leopardstown, but you could see very good horses get beaten at this meeting. Such is the strength of these races.
Okay. Well, perhaps fair to say, chief amongst the big horses that Willie has is Gallop and Deschamps. Loves Leopardstown, unbeaten in all six starts over fences, aiming for three in a row in the Irish Gold Cup. So will he fend off Factifile?
It'll be closer than it was at Christmas, I think. There's a lot of depth to this race. There's 10 runners, so it's not a two-horse race by any means. You've King George winner Hewick in there, the Aintree National winner Ian Maximus, Monty Starr, an exciting novice, Embassy Gardens is very good at Tremor and Conflated as a previous winner. But I think if Mark Walsh can get Factifile to switch off better than he did at Christmas, he's going to get closer to Gallop and Deschamps. But you mentioned that statistic, and it's hard to get away from it. Gallop and Deschamps, 6 from 6 over fences around Leopardstown. He probably is the best version of himself at this track over this trip. And I think, yes, he's won 2 Cheltenham Gold Cups, but if he were to win a third Irish Gold Cup, he'd join Beaver Salmon, Jodami and Florida Pearl in that elite group of 3-time winners.
Okay. You mentioned the Irish Champion Hurdle on Sunday. Stateman, winners the last 2 years, versus the emerging force that is Lost Him Out, a much-anticipated clash, Jane.
Yeah, it really is. I suppose it's a disappointment to a certain degree that we don't have brighter days ahead, but Stateman's a dual winner of the race. He's chasing a hat-trick and he has to get his career back on track after a dismal display at Leopardstown over Christmas. And then you've Lost Him Out, who's the up-and-coming young pretender, just turned 6-year-old. The mare that went over to take on Constitution Hill at Kempton didn't match him. By no means did she match him. But she finished within 2.5 lengths of him. And just to put that into context, that when Stateman went across to Cheltenham and ran in the Champion Hurdle against Constitution Hill back in March of 23, he was beaten 9 lengths. Not saying it's like for like, but I'm just saying Stateman didn't get as close as she did. She's currently favourite. She's the mount of Danny Mullins. It was a little bit of a question mark whether Paul Tannen would pick the mare or stay loyal to his tried and trusted Stateman. And he has stayed loyal to the dual Irish Champion Hurdle winner over the young pretender.
Okay. Obviously disappointing, as you say, no brighter days ahead on show this weekend. But perhaps where or what are Gordon Elliott's best chances elsewhere? So
I think Gordon has some very good bumper horses. We're going to see a couple of them unleashed each day, but Classic Creek and Cocktail Brute are two that he has in on the first day. But I think a horse called He Can't Dance, the mount of Harry Swan, is quite a good horse and he'll be a force to be reckoned with. He also saddles Firefox in the Irish Arkell. Firefox is a little bit more experienced than the likes of Elas Antique and Majborough. That may well prove pivotal for him. I think he's going to feel a number of other runners, but they're the two of the top for me. Outside of the main yards, I think Barry Connell has a really good chance at Marine National in the Dublin Chase. He ran really well behind Solness and Gaelic Warrior over Christmas. And shout out to Declan Queeley's yard, who are saddling a number of Grade 1 runners and a number of handicap runners over the 2 days. A small outfit from down in Dungarvan. They took the Galmoy Hurdle with Rocky's Diamond at Goran Park on Tuesday's day, and maybe something like Mozzie's Sister might give them something to shout about over the weekend.
Okay, that's always great to see the spread. if it is a case of Mullins winning all eight grade ones, similar to last year, perhaps Gavin Cromwell and Hello Neighbour in the juvenile hurdle tomorrow might be the best bet against stopping that?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that is a really exciting horse because, number one, he started him as a debutante over hurdles in grade two company at Christmas. Like, that was such a huge ask of that horse. And I know he jumped poorly and he pulled hard, but he did things wrong so that he could have margin for improvement. And secondly, they're putting a hood on him. I think he's a really potentially quite a good horse. So yes, there is the likelihood of him. There's a couple of big field handicaps that are worthy of mention as well. And I mentioned Queeley's there earlier. I can't mention that yard without mentioning Cardmore Spruce in the Mare's Bumper on Sunday. She's a really good mare. She's two from three, and Cardmore Spruce is going to take a lot of beating in the Mare's Bumper on the Sunday. And Martin Brazel's James is gating the handicap as well on the Sunday is worthy of a mention under Derek O'Connor. But as I said, the quality of these races shouldn't be underestimated. There was 11 Cheltenham Festival winners came out of these 2 days last year, but only four of them actually managed to win in Dublin. So there are horses going to get beaten here, but they're going to go on to further success, no doubt, in the rest of the season.
Okay, lots to look forward to. There will be updates on Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport on RT Radio 1. And there's also television coverage, which you'll be part of, Jane.
Yes, do join us. We're on air from 1 o'clock tomorrow. I'm hosting tomorrow with Ruby, Barry Geraghty and Lisa O'Neill. And then Hugh will be back from the rugby on Sunday to host the show with Davey Russell, myself and Andy Mack. So keep us all fresh. Hopefully the boys in green get across the line, and then hopefully some of these horses make us some money.
Here's hoping. Jane, enjoy the weekend. As Jane mentioned, at 1 o'clock RT1 tomorrow and the RTE Player, and then on Sunday 1 o'clock on RT2 and the RTE Player. We're turning our attention to Gaelic games. Hurling first with Shane McGrath after the break. RTE 2FM. Now, Shane McGrath joins us to chat hurling ahead of round two of the Allianz League. And Shane, only one place to start, Cork Limerick, under lights in the park. What excites you most about this Saturday night clash under lights, Shane? We've got too excited, you know. We bigged it up at the start of the show that it's a bank holiday and we're getting far too excited about a weekend of sport. We can't even preview it because of technical issues and gremlins here. I can tell you the fixtures this weekend that we are looking forward to. We're going to get Shane McGrath back up very, very shortly and preview Cork versus Limerick, the big one tomorrow evening under lights. Galway are on the road to Kilkenny and Tipperary face Wexford. Wexford took a heavy defeat to Cork last weekend, so tough times for Keith Rossiter and that rebuild that he is trying to achieve with Wexford at the moment. Clare have the bye week, and that's in the top division. And then in the, I don't even know what you call it now, Division 1B, I think is the official wording of it anyway. Waterford opened their account after an off week, bye week last week away to Carlow. Antrim host Westmead and Laois versus Offaly. Shane McGrath is with us to get excited about Cork versus Limerick tomorrow evening, Shane.
Yeah, how's things, Shane? Up?
You're looking forward to it. What excites you most about this clash under lights?
You know, it's probably the two best teams in the country going at it. They're thereabouts. Clare people might like me saying that, but they're not far off it anyway. And like, as a player, this is the one you want to play. And as a fan, it's the one you want to watch. And like, nearly a full house. And pitch will be in immaculate condition. And Saturday night brings its own thing. So what I'm trying to say is, it's the closest thing to a championship game you're probably going to get at the end of January in regards as the atmosphere and just the teams involved. And you know, both teams have gone fairly strong from it. I see Cork have, well, they had 9 of their 15, but I heard they're not too long ago that Rob Downey won't be playing due to injury, so Luke Mead come in for him. But they've 8 from their 15 from the All-Ireland semi-final last year. And if you look at Limerick, then Limerick have 7 of the lads who played the All-Ireland semi-final last year. And just even the talking points around the Limerick team, like, say, you know, Decky Hannon isn't centre back at the moment, and you know Keane Lynch is going to be captain, so maybe they're looking for a change there. And Kyle Hayes, for me, is the guy to do the job. So he's at 6, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Adam English is getting his go at midfield. In my opinion, this guy, based on his club form and you know how he's playing in college stuff, like, I think he's one of the best hurlers in the country. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes, because it's just so competitive on the Limerick team. Like, if he is to make it, he's going to try and keep out his club mate in Darragh O'Donovan. And up front then, see how Shane O'Brien, Paddy O'Donovan, these guys, Aidan O'Connor, how these guys get on against Cork. Like, so it's, brilliant for John Kiely in that he's looking at lads, and this is the atmosphere, this is the melting pot, this is the pressure cooker that you want to test them out in. And I suppose the biggest talking point then will be the goalkeeper and how he gets on it. Jason Gillan at the moment. And, you know, it's a big game for him. Like, you know, he's big shoes to fill in the form of Nicky Quaid. And then for Pat Ryan then, I suppose, you know, he didn't really get much out of the Wexford game, really, you know. I mean, it wasn't much good to him. They probably would have got more of an internal game. But that's just where Wexford at the moment. I heard you saying there during the rebuild. But they have a few changes. Gekki Dalton is suspended. So he's getting replaced by Ethan Toomey. And Owen Roach comes in for Sean O'Donoghue. But for me, we had the likes of Kieran Joyce and Alan Connolly, and they're getting called into the team. I think that's an indication as well that, you know, they're going to go at this strong. So I just think it's all built up for a serious game. They just been lucky enough to play down there and to work down there as an analyst as well. Park Creeve, brilliant atmosphere as well, Shane. So if I had to call it, I don't know. I think it's a very 50-50 one. Maybe a bit of home advantage for the Cork, and the Cork crowd will get behind them. But I think it's going to be a very close game.
Mm. For the challenge that John Kiely has now in rebuilding somewhat or re-energising, refreshing, Kyle Hazelting played six in the challenge match last week against Waterford now. And you mentioned with Declan Hannan, the new captaincy, new goalkeeper. We're not sure if Nicky Quaid will be back in the summer. Probably unlikely with the seriousness of the injury now. Is this the biggest challenge that John Kiely has had in a good few years anyway? Because Limerick isn't a county that you can kind of go under the radar in a transition at all. Not that they're in a transition, but to try and find those new bodies.
I wouldn't say it's the biggest challenge he's had. It's the first round of the league for them. Like, so I'd say he look at it like that. I think it's interesting in that, I suppose, if you kind of, you know, you always compare greatness to greatness. Like, and I suppose if you compare this Limerick team to where Kilkenny were, and the way, you know, when they were going for five in a row, it didn't work. But they came back the following year, and Shane, like, they made three or four changes on their team, and the likes of Paul Murphy, Colin Finlay, and these guys stepped into the fold for Kilkenny. Like, and I suppose maybe realistically, if you look at Limerick where they were even last year, and go back to 2018 when they made the breakthrough, it probably was 12 or 13 guys still involved in the top 15 that played the All-Ireland semi-final last year. And I suppose that's what John maybe is looking at. He's saying, look, I'm probably going to need two or three guys to really break through on this thing. And if not make it, we'll then push the regular guys, the guys who won All-Stars, Hurlers of the Year, All-Ireland, loads of Munster medals, push them to go another level. And if they can't go another level, we'll then say to these newer guys in inverted commas, like the Adam English, Carl O'Neill, these kind of guys, to say, you know, you push on. Shane O'Brien as well, I throw him in there. That if you're going well enough, you know, you're going to start this year. And I think it's a good headache to have. And I actually think, Shane, that Limerick are going to be better this year than what they were last year, because with these new guys, you know, the newer guys, let's say the guys with great experience now, gosh, but they're coming in now and they want to be on the team now. And then, like, getting Barry Nash back. Obviously, the goalie thing is a big thing for them. And I think that will be a challenge for them to try and fill the Nicky Quaid void, because that, as the song says, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And Nicky Quaid, they've one of the best goalies ever. Like, so I don't think it's his biggest challenge ever. But I think it's just ideal for both on him and Pat Ryan. If there's three or four guys that they really want to find out about, I think tomorrow night they'll find out a lot about them.
Okay, should be a cracker tomorrow evening in Cork. Tipperary against Wexford. We mentioned Wexford taking a heavy defeat to Cork, and Keith Rossiter trying to find some unearth new bodies. Is there a fear, if you're a Wexford fan, I'm sure you don't have this fear, that Tip might hop off Wexford this weekend?
I suppose, look, the worry is there. You know, like you mentioned there, like the amount of lads are missing, the amount of lads that have retired, lads that are not available through injury. And it's hard going on Keith Rossiter there at the moment, like, to even get 25, 26 guys there just to be togging out for these games. And look, they just maybe don't have the strength and depth that other counties have. And they're coming up to Thurles and Tipper. There's a great feeling with the group at the moment. Like, I think people need to calm down a small bit maybe and not get too carried away with what happened in Salt Hill last week. But at the same time, Tip have been asked one question so far, like, Can you go up to Galway and beat Galway? And they answered it, and they did more than answer it. They showed great heart. They worked very hard. The six new guys that came in last week, Shane, and played for the first time for the Tip senior team, in a competitive environment, and that was massive. So they're in a good place. Liam has made no bones about it as well, that if you're playing well, you're going to keep playing on the team. And So there's good old competition in there at the moment for places, and the fact it's on in Thurles as well. I'd say Tip should drive on and win the game. For Keith then, I think what he wants more than that, I think, is a performance. He just didn't get it because of conditions and then the sending off and everything. And it was 11 or 12 points they scored. I think he just wants a performance and let the results be what it is. But it's just the nature of this league. And I think it's a very well laid out league, Shane. Like that, they'll be playing Kilkenny next, Wexford. And we know the rivalry that's there. Like that, he knows that if he can't get 2 points on the board this week, and you're hoping to get 2 points off Kilkenny, like if there's one crowd that won't want to give Wexford anything, it's definitely Kilkenny. Like, so I just think I think it's a big ask of them with the amount of bodies that they're missing at the moment. And the quality that's stepped away, they just don't have the quality to fill that void at the moment.
Okay, before I get your thoughts on Kilkenny against Galway, just on the topic of missing a few key players, Waterford, of course, missing a host of hurlers. Similar to Limerick, we haven't seen them out in action, in league action just yet. Might it be a benefit to Waterford to be in the lower of the top divisions in terms of regrouping?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely help them, Shane. I don't know how long your programme is, but I could give the next half an hour listening who's not there. Like, for Waterford, it's tough going. Caelum Lyes, Jack Fagan, Colin Dunford, gone away travelling. Neil Montgomery, gone away at work. Injured, Daisy Hutchinson, Ty DeBurca, Stephen Bennett, Darragh Lyons, Ozzie Gleeson. Hard going for Peter Creedy. Like, all them guys are probably going to be unavailable to him until March, mid-March. Like, you're talking about the end of the league. And what in fairness to him, I heard him talk during the week, he's a very positive guy, glass half full. He's saying, right, I know all these guys are missing, but look, it's an opportunity now for other guys, for our younger guys. And they went up and played Limerick in a challenge match last week, and, you know, I suppose both of them were very experimental sides out, but he was happy with how they did. And I agree with you, maybe being in that 1B will help these new younger guys for Waterford come in, get a bit of experience, maybe without getting hiding that they might get if they were up in the top, in 1A, against, you know, the top teams, like that in 1B, you know, they've Carlow there now at the weekend, you know, that they might be able to find their feet a little bit more. And that's with all due respect to who's there, but that's just the way it is. Like, I think Waterford, if they have everyone, they're looking at being in the 1B final against Dublin. They don't at the moment, so it'll be interesting to see how the next few games go for them and how Peter Creely will even line out this team. Like.
With the new format, two up, two down, Galway will be under pressure already if they don't win against a Kilkenny side that are going to be fancied at home against the Tribes. And a big improvement for Galway needed from last weekend.
Yeah, massive. Look, and like Keith Rossiter, I think Mahal Donoghue is looking for a performance. Like, he just didn't get it at all. Like, 63 minutes gone in the game there the other day. I think there's 17 points in it. And, you know, regardless of who you're playing or the time of year, I think you just want, you know, that bit of passion, that bit of energy that we normally see from the Galway thing. And that's what Mihal Dunne wants more than that now, especially down in Nolan Park, like, because it's just so hard to go down there, no matter who Kilkenny have or who they don't have. Their home place, usually good crowd there supporting them. And I just think he wants a performance. I think he just wants to come out of it and say, look, lads really, really tried. They gave me everything there today. Like, he's on a 4-year term, Shane, and you don't get that for no reason. Like, he knows, and the Galway hurling people or the Galway people who know that, this is a bit of a rebuild. Like, I mean, he had lads playing there last week that real, like, hurling people who watch and hurling all the time, they wouldn't have even heard of some of the lads playing for Galway there the last day. They wouldn't know really nothing about them. And that's just where it's at. But I suppose the killing thing from Mihal Dunoghue is he has a long-term contract, but he needs performances in the short term to try and stay there, like, so he can actually kind of fulfil this thing. And I think that's maybe what people need to give Galway now and give Mihal Dunoghue is probably need to be patient with him, give him a bit of time, because he is trying to build the thing again. That's what he's doing. Everybody can see that. But I think what he wants more than anything is just a better performance, a bit more passion in the thing, a bit more drive in the thing. Because if they don't, and let's say it turns out they get another hiding, you know, I mean, it's hard going from, because their next match is Clare, like. And Clare getting lads back all the time as the weeks go on and on. And I think someone like I know this is just a cutthroat of it, like, that after two games, if you've nothing on the board, people are going to say, well, there you go, it's looking like you're going to be in relegation, and that's the nature of it. And for Derek Ling, he went down to Ennis. Okay, Clare only had four of the lads who played the All-Ireland final last year on the team. That's fair enough. But you know what? Kilkenny went down there. They hadn't won there since 2013. And for the few times they were down there, they won. They won it. They won it in a tough way. And the momentum that they'll get and the bit of buzz that'll be in the camp after that and at Nolan Park, I couldn't see anything except the Kilkenny victory there on Sunday, Shane.
Okay, we will leave the conversation there for now. Shane McGrath, lots to look forward to in hurling. Thanks so much for taking the call. Lots to look forward to in Gaelic football as well. And Brendan Devaney joins us on the line now to chat through all of that, starting with your own Donegal against Dublin, Brendan, and Michael Murphy, the so-called goalkeeper. The return of Michael Murphy. What's to look forward to for Donegal against Dublin, Brendan?
Yeah, yes, indeed. Listen, I think all fixtures in Division 1 this year, you know, many seasons have been hobbling in there. You might not be that worried about it, but I think every game, you're like, there's massive intrigue. And so that would be if these teams were normally playing each other, add in all the rules and add the backstories then that come with that, the likes of Michael Murphy coming back after 2 years out of retirement and the rumours of goalkeeping and possibilities there. And listen, I don't know if he's going to make it or not. The word is in the street, he might have a hamstring injury, so we're not sure if we'll just see him back lining out for Donegal just yet, whether that be full forward or net session.
Okay, well, perhaps we mightn't see Michael Murphy, but overall, the Donegal panel is stronger this season, not just because of Michael Murphy, but you have the re-addition of Oran McFadden-Ferry, Young Finbar, Rorty, Owen McHugh, Owen McGettigan. There's a lot of positivity emanating from the hills of Donegal, Brendan.
Yeah, well, I suppose you won in Ulster last year and won in Division 2. You know, the exact same as what Donegal did in Jim's first year, 2011, then going to Northern Ireland semi and defeated there, which is what happened that year as well. The similarities is unbelievable when you look at it. So, listen, huge positivity. Yeah, if you unearth a couple of players at all, I mean, particularly last year, Alexa Kieran Moore, they came through from nowhere and was absolutely phenomenal for Donegal. There's a massive season, I think, coming in him. So, yeah, with those players back in, you know, what can we create a position for them? Where are they going to play? You know, can they become part of this team as we're knowing now? There's a lot of fatigue coming now with the new rules in terms of getting up and down the pitch. So your squad are going to be used to their max. So you need everybody pulling on that. And I suppose for Dublin themselves, you know, new players in there playing well. You know, McInnes, Huff, Murphy, fellas like that. You know, there's really going to be like a new Dublin team coming, you know, and the likes of Kilkenny, Bugler, Baskell, Howard. These guys are going to be the most experienced players there looking to take this team forward. And I think in many ways it's a massive challenge for this new look Dublin team to come somewhere like Ballybofey, where Jim McGuinness has never been defeated a league or championship and won the match. And Dublin have beat Donegal on the last four occasions, but the previous victory to that, the fifth game, where was it, Shane? Ballybofey. So that's what the Donegal fans are hoping for tomorrow evening.
Fortress McCool Park for Donegal against Dublin. 7:30 live on TG Cahir for that one. On RTE television, Armagh against Tyrone. Is this going to be an old school battle with a sprinkle of new rules, Brendan?
Yeah, listen, what a rivalry between these two teams. It never goes away. You know, even if either team was, you know, their fortunes were going up and down, and certainly Armagh come to town as champions. Like, listen, Box at Athletic Grounds, it's by far the best ground in Ulster for a football match, because it just, the Armagh faithful have got so tuned into it lately going up there. And with Tyrone just being their neighbours, it's going to be an absolute sellout, of course, the first game back. Of course, losing that first match in a tight league, pressure comes on teams very quickly. A lot of teams saying, you know, question Armagh, can they back it up this season? They lost away to Galway. Now they're at home. It's a vital one for them. You have the Rain O'Neill story in the background. What's happened there? You know, is there some kind of fallout? That's what we're hearing on the street. So, Listen, he's the main man. If you want someone supplying the artillery, you know, to the target man inside, you're going to need him there. So, Tyrone, of course, coming, you know, without their Elgar Kiernan, still too good for Derry last week. So, that's a bit of a warning. Say, Margaret Rourke, of course, coming out, a load of new players in there. Young Michael Hone coming on, looks a serious forward, you know, and they've likes of Rory Brennan and Teague back in their defence. Hampsey to come back as well, big men around the middle. So add in there, go Kieran, five or six that will come along with him, and Tyrone are really going to build up ahead of steam. Now, I just think Armagh are going to be so desperate at home to get these couple of points, and with a homecoming in that, it might be enough with this weakened Tyrone squad for them to take the 2 points.
Okay, there are the matches tomorrow. On Sunday then, the early throw-in, the Paddy Tally Derby, Derry against Kerry. Obviously, we haven't seen Donegal out in action yet. Likewise, Kerry. How do you feel Kerry will adapt to the new rules, and what might we see up in Derry?
Yeah, well, of all teams in it, Shane, listen, I think Kerry's been by far the most affected by the changing nature of football and how teams have looked to stop teams playing, because they want to play. They'll beat you by playing. They have the purest footballers. They have the talented men. And right up into, I suppose, the Dublin takeover, you know, they still won 5 All-Irelands in the 10 years previous to the Dublin domination, where they took 7 titles from 2010 to 20. And it just shows you that this Kerry team, for me, the way they've been locked down in games, they haven't really, for me, enjoyed their football. And it looks like the new rules could open up the game and get them playing again and get them, you know, back front footed, of course. Paddy Clifford was named to play last week. I don't know if David will be back or not yet. So certainly, you know, look, O'Neill has come in there from Galway. The coach, Kane O'Neill, has come down there. Maybe a bit of freshness to this Kerry team, and I suppose a bit of excitement. And of all teams, I think, in the country, they are the team that could profit the most from the new rules, because they don't want this 15 behind the ball. They want the game to be end-to-end. And if it is, and you have the talent that they had, particularly with the Clevers and Sean O'Shea, etc., you know, it's hard to stop. Everybody's trying to shut down space, and the Kerry lads want to use that space.
Okay, finally, Brendan, in Division 1, Mayo against Galway. Galway looked decent in their win over Armagh. Mayo, of course, lost at Croke Park, but there's a lot of positives that Kevin McStay will take from that performance as well. So these are two teams that, like, listen, old rivalry and all that, Western rivalry, provincial rivals. It is round two of the league. That's the caveat to all of these questions when we're trying to big up a match here. There's going to still be trying to find out different tweaks, I suppose.
Yeah, listen, you're talking to my friends in Mayo, they're just, it's this thing. Now, games are tight, there's not much between teams, but the feeling is for Mayo people, they keep coming out the wrong side of these tight games. Mm. It happens too often. They want to see progression. You know, they want to see the ability to come eke out the victory there against Dublin instead of it going the other way. I mean, who was marking Sean Bugler? You might ask, and I'm just not really blaming any one player, but how the team never got the grips of half-back scoring 7 points. I mean, there's things that go on there. You just think they're always so close. And until they put that right and you see a more solid Mayo side that can really cope in those tight, tight positions. And we haven't mentioned goalkeepers yet. You know, obviously, the 12v11, which is the talk of GAA, seeing in terms of how teams are using keepers. And, you know, well, length didn't come out for Derry last week, for example. Morgan absolutely freaking played a massive part in Tyrone's victory. So, you know, you have O'Flaherty there in the background, Conor Flaherty for Galway. He can play out the field, Kerry Galway lad. Is it someone Park Joyce might use for Mayo? Are they going to come up to speed in that? Because I think as long as that 12v11 possibility stays, you're going to have to use your goalkeepers. But I think, you know, if you look at the Galway squad, you know, we know all about the star forwards inside, but I think breaking from half-back, really, Sean Kelly and fellas, I guess, just there's so much potential in this Galway team if they're all fit. I think they have too much going power for Mayo, and Mayo beat them in the league last year. Of course, Galway beat them in Connacht then and took the championship scalp. So listen, big game for Mayo. You lose your opening game, you really need to win your home game. So it's pressure on Mayo. Galway have the 2 points in the bag. They can come a bit more relaxed and try and take the victory over the old rivals, as you say.
Mm. Before I let you go, Brendan, going into round two of the National Football League, still no rule book, which is quite bizarre. And you mentioned the 12 against 11 there. Like, in terms of tactics or styles or specific incidents, is there anything from the rules that you saw last week that you're going to be keeping a particular eye on this weekend?
Yeah, it's funny, when the rules first come out, I interviewed a couple of Donegal refs here just to say, listen, I thought it was going to be like the rugby where you just step across the line, the three at the back defenders, where there'll be somebody saying, get back. But they were like, no, it's going to be policed and that's it. And it's farcical that someone accidentally comes across and someone gets a free and then they can take it out for a two-pointer. I mean, Shane, you imagine a big championship game decided on that. I mean, just somebody accidentally goes across. I mean, if somebody's coming back tackling, fair enough. If they're coming back and they're aware of it or whatever they're at, that's okay. But for the rules to be appreciated so tightly, it's just not on. It's putting far too much pressure on the refs. Listen, I agree the game had to change, the rules had to change, but really, you look at it now, the kick-out, you know, everybody's cramped around midfield now. It'd be better letting the short kick-out go, having players pushed up, let then the player that gets it, he has to come out with the ball. I get rid of the 2-point arc. I never like that. No, I wouldn't want that in the game. Get rid of the 12v11. And really, I would keep the tap and go and keep the three up. And those three, I think, would be enough, Shane, for the game to turn back somewhere near the way we want it.
Okay, well, the learning process continues. Brendan Devetti, for now, we'll leave the conversation there. Just to mention, in Division 2, Cork are weighted down. Loud host Roscommon, Mead Cavan and Monaghan against Westmead. Monaghan and Cork victorious last weekend. We are taking a short break. Then we're chatting soccer with Alan Colley.
RTE 2FM.
Now, Alan Colley is still with us to chat football, look ahead at the weekend Premier League action, but also to reflect on, we covered the transfers at the top of the show, Alan, and European draws. Manchester City will play Real Madrid in a blockbuster Champions League playoff showdown, while Celtic have been pitted against Bayern Munich. Of course, last season, Real knocked Pep Guardiola City out in the quarterfinals on penalties after a classic two-legged affair that ended 4-4 on aggregate. Juventus were drawn against PSV Eindhoven. Feyenoord were paired with AC Milan, while Club Brugge will face Atalanta. There's an all-French tie between Brest and Paris Saint-Germain. AS Monaco will take on Benfica, and Sporting have been drawn against Borussia Dortmund. Standout tie, City Real Madrid, it's fair to say.
Absolute cracker, Shane, yeah. But I'd worry for Man City. We've seen them, obviously, in the European game against PSG last week, coming unstuck. And I would worry for them against Real Madrid. I know their league form has picked up, but I still wouldn't be convinced that they're back all guns blazing. Now, in the league, if you notice, they've had the new additions, obviously the new signings, which re-energised them a little bit against Chelsea last week, and that was badly needed, an injection of energy into that team. But they won't have them in the Champions League games. And obviously, when you look at them last week against PSG, that's where I found that they were really came unstuck in terms of their energy in that second half. Real Madrid, even though they've got off to a slow start this year in La Liga, they're back all guns blazing now, sitting top of La Liga. Mbappe has kind of come into the form that we all expected him to be in. It took him a while to get going, but I would only fancy Real Madrid in that one, Shane.
Okay, in terms of the other English teams, Liverpool in the next round will play either AS Monaco, Benfica, Brest or PSG, and Arsenal, Feyenoord, AC Milan, Juventus or PSV as well. So PSV, I should say, not PSG. So lots to dig through there. And just to mention, in the Europa League playoff, Roma will face Porto as they bid to join Manchester United, Tottenham and Rangers in the last 16. United and Spurs finished third and fourth in the league standings respectively and will face one of either Real Sociedad, Galatasaray, AZ Alkmaar or Midtjylland in the last 16. The playoff draw paired Galatasaray with AZ Alkmaar and Real Sociedad against Midtjylland. Rangers, who came 8th in the league standings, will play one of Bodø/Glimt, Anderlecht, Twente or Fenerbahce. Jose Mourinho's Fenerbahce were drawn to face Anderlecht, while Twente will take on Bodø/Glimt and Ferencváros. Robbie Keane's Ferencváros play Victoria Pilsen, and PAOK will meet FCSB of Romania, who United defeated yesterday, and who Alan Colley hit the woodwork against in a behind closed doors for St. Pat's in the
Where did you drag that one out of, Shane? Where did you drag that one out of? Many moons ago. It was actually in the RDS.
You hit the woodwork in the RDS.
Yeah.
It was behind closed doors anyway. You hit the bar in the
We had them rattled as well. And then I'm looking at the stadium they're playing in last night. Absolutely phenomenal stadium.
You missed out. You missed out on the big stadiums and multi-year contracts in the League of Ireland. Right, let's chat Premier League for the last 10 minutes of the show, Alan Colley. Let us start with Arsenal Manchester City. This was billed to be the big one. The big one. It still is a big match, to be fair. A lot has changed since these sides last locked horns in a bad-tempered clash back in September. Transfer news as well. Ollie Watkins is happy to stay at Aston Villa. He's turned down Arsenal. Arsenal now will be turning their attention to the summer. Same old story.
I'm surprised at that, Shane, to be honest. Not so much him turning it down, but Arsenal going in late in the day for Ollie Watkins tells me, do they really want him? Like, we know they're desperate for a striker, but why would you go in now so late in the day and offer 60 million? You might as well...
You've answered yourself, they're desperate for a striker.
I know they're desperate, but why would... You might as well actually go to whole hog. If you're going to pay 60 million for a 29-year-old, you might as well go to whole hog and pay Sesko or one of those top boys that they're looking at, Gyökeres or maybe, and pay 90 million and get one of them or even Isak. And he's the one I think they're holding out for. You're not going to get him now, obviously, with the season he's having with Newcastle. They're not going to sell him. You may get him in the summer, but you're looking at huge money. So I don't think they should spend 60 million on Ollie Watkins, to be honest with you. They definitely need a striker and maybe bring in someone who might be back up for the moment. But if you're going to spend that amount of money, you might as well hold off till the summer and go big and go all out for someone that is kind of going to be there in the long term as well. 29 now for Watkins. Good player. I like Ollie Watkins. He's done very well for himself since his days really at Brentford and since he's gone to Villa. But I wouldn't be paying that kind of money for him.
Okay, if you look at the league table, Arsenal, of course, are better placed. But in terms of league form coming into this and how the teams are shaping up, who are better placed going into this big clash on Sunday?
Yeah, I mentioned here even kind of just in the little summary of Man City in their tie that they're going to face at Real Madrid, that their league form has picked up, Shane. They've been very good in the league in the last weeks, largely down to the fact, I think, of the opposition that they've played as well. Ipswich, of course, struggling at the bottom. And Chelsea, I felt kind of... gifted them a couple of goals as well last week, especially after the good start that Chelsea got off to. And City were vulnerable in that game, and I felt they could have put them to the sword, Chelsea, and had they gone 2-0 up, I think they would have went on to win the game. But they did well to come back, and I mentioned also the couple of new signings, the injection of energy into the team, which was badly needed. So I think they're much better placed to give Arsenal a game, but I'd have to fancy Arsenal, and especially the fact that they're going for the league as well, Shane, at home in front of their own fans. The pressure is all on them. They need to win far more than what Man City need to win. We know now Man City are not going to win the league. They're in the mix for the top four. Whether they win at the weekend or whether they lose at the weekend, they're still going to be in that mix for the top four until the end of the season. So I think all the pressure is on Arsenal to try and just keep tabs with Liverpool. If they can remain within the 6 points towards the end, kind of last maybe 5-6 games, I still think they have a chance. I know they have the game in hand, Liverpool, and that'll push it out to 9. But that game in hand is against a resurgent Everton, and they've picked up obviously under David Moyes, so that won't be a gimme like it maybe was 6-7 weeks ago. And of course, it's a big derby, as we know, so it was never probably going to be a gimme anyway. If it goes to 9, I can't see any way back. Whilst it remains in and around the 5 or 6, I still give Arsenal hope.
Okay. Tomorrow is far from a gimme for Liverpool, away to Bournemouth.
And this is what I'm saying. So it's a huge weekend. Everybody was kind of focusing on last weekend as being a big one in terms of where they see the title going towards the end of the season. I think this is even bigger over the weekend. Bournemouth in unbelievable form. We mentioned him last week on the show, Shane. I think it's 11 games unbeaten out of 1-7, drawn 4. Iriola has done a phenomenal job when you consider the injuries he has as well. Hasn't mentioned him once, just focused on what he has, what he's implemented there in terms of the style of play, the amount of goals. I think it's 9 in their last 2, 35 shots, like all out attack at times. It's brilliant to watch. And a couple of the young lads, Huijsen playing centre half, phenomenal find. He really is. He's only 19 years of age. He's been unbelievable at the back. Kirk has the left full as well. A lot of teams looking at him as a potential summer signing also. So Bournemouth have done an unbelievable season so far. And I think it's a really, really tough game for Liverpool away to them tomorrow. One where I could see them dropping points, to be honest with you. Now, they had the luxury during the week, Shane, of leaving all their players out, more or less. I think Gakpo was the only one to play during the week that could play at the weekend. But so they have that luxury, so it'll be a fresh Liverpool going into that game. But I think they could draw points. I really fancy Bournemouth, especially at home. They're having a phenomenal season and they'll cause Liverpool all sorts of problems.
Okay, Spurs beat Elsberg 3-0 last night. The Andra surgeon, Alan Colley. It's going to be grand for Spurs against Brentford on Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Well, what annoyed me about this as well, Shane, and there's lots of annoyed me about Spurs and Ange over the last few weeks, but what really annoyed me was here he is playing young fellas that he could have thrown in instead of crying about injuries and playing players week after week and saying we've nobody else to play. Yet the three young fellas that played last night made a real difference. Now, I know it was Elfsborg and you're not pitting them into maybe a tough Premier League game, but they would have added energy and a fearlessness anyway had they thrown them into a Premier League game and given relief to some of the players that he's basically saying have been flogged over a period of time because of all the injuries. It's a lot of excuses for me out of Ange. I know people will point to the fact that it's facts that they're injured, they are. But he's quick to point to that and use it as an excuse. Whereas here's three young fellas that could have played long before, got the fans on side in terms of academy graduates as well that they love to see Shane playing, and you'd earn yourself a little bit of credit in the bank as well in terms of playing a young fella over maybe a big summer signing that's not doing his business. So I think he missed a trick in that regard. He could have played these lads maybe over the last few weeks. But it was great to see them get a chance last night and score as well. Relief for now, but I'm not sure in the long term.
Okay, will we see some consistency from United? You watched them last night. They take on Palace on Sunday.
I watched them last night, Shane, and it was a little bit better, but I would factor in, I thought Steaua Bucharest were dreadful. It was a better Steaua Bucharest team that I played against than the one played last night, Shane.
FCSB, you're not going to call them Steaua Bucharest. You cause political unrest.
It'll always be Steaua Bucharest to me, Shane.
You're a traditionalist.
But I watched the game, yeah, and United did play well. A couple of little tweaks. He obviously played Manu further forward because he has worries about him in that kind of defensive position in a two. So played him further forward. Did quite well. Thought Garnacho played well. Hoyland was still struggling. He does this strange thing, Amorim, that I'd love to know, or I'd love to know his reasoning. He makes a substitution every game with the centre halves. Sometimes two, even one last night again, bringing on Yaro. So a little bit better, but a long way to go, Shane.
Okay, elsewhere, Everton Leicester should be a cracker. Relegation 6-pointer in that cliched end to the show. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor, our producer, Leon Dunn, our broadcast coordinator, Alan Colley. Big thanks
come
to
come on
for,
the farm.
Good luck to Home Farm under 12s tomorrow. Blattin and Tracy is up next with the National Chart Show. Have a great bank holiday weekend. Game On is back from 6 o'clock on Monday. RTE 2FM.